You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got a positivity bomb for you. We're going to talk about how everything in web development is amazing. It's very easy to be a Debbie Downer or sort of be down on how lots of things are still hard. But in this episode, we're just going to kind of go through the last 5-10 years of web development and talk about how much better everything has become. We are sponsored by 3 awesome companies. First one is FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. Second one is Sentry, Error Exception and Performance Tracking. And third one is Linode. They do Linux cloud hosting and a whole lot more. We'll talk about all of them partway through the episode. So, Scott, how are you doing today? Feeling positive?
I am feeling positive. Yesterday, I got on the roof with the ladder and I took the leaf blower. Actually, we had so many leaves on our stinking roof that I had to use the snow shovel to get them off because the leaf blower was just like, I have a pretty bad A leaf blower.
Yeah,
as
you got
well.
A beefy leaf blower.
It kicks. And that thing was just like, I can't do it. There's too many leaves and pods on here. So I felt very positive. I got all the gutters cleaned out. It felt very good to do all that stuff. So I'm feeling good. How about you? How are you feeling? Very fall.
Yeah. We've been working on our house as well. We got these a couple years ago. We got these gutter covers installed.
Oh yeah.
Like you can buy these ones at the home improvement store that like go over and they fall off and they get keys stuck in them. But we got like these, just like, it's like sheets of metal with holes in it installed by like a gutter guy. And it's awesome because we never have to. We have like a super sketchy roof that's like really high, and I can't go up there because I would fall off for sure. So we got those installed and never have to worry about that type of thing.
I was on the roof of my office, so this is very different. It is one story. I was telling Courtney, I was like, besides the fact that I could just jump off this thing, I'm like, there's like 3 trees that I could like Jackie Chan it over to if I needed to, you know, and like do a little swing off the thing. Yeah, you know, I'm kind of a monkey man over here, so it's like totally valid that I could have done that if I got stuck. It's fun being up there and cleaning that up. I need to get some gutter cleaner or some gutter somethings over here because we have so many leaves in this house. Holy cow.
You have like a forest in your backyard.
We literally have like 9 mature trees. Yeah. It's outrageous. On a tiny little lot, 9 mature trees. It's just like, yeah, it is totally enveloped in leaves here.
Full-time job,
right? Well, let's get into it. I love this note that you say, like, we complain a lot as devs. There is a huge portion of the community that is just complaints. This stinks. This is hard. This is CSS is hard to make things centered, even though it's not. Like, all sorts of little things where people are just complaining all the time. But we are here to give you a little bit of a positivity bomb and just talk about how much better things truly are today than they were even 5-10 years ago. It has been an outrageous improvement across the board in every tech. I think this episode could have been like 4 episodes if we really wanted to fill it out because there's so many good things. Our lives have improved dramatically if you've been coding for any amount of time. And if you haven't, you're going to get to listen to 2 dudes who've been doing this for a long time. And we can say like, yeah, things are a lot better looking back at it. And we are really excited about the current state of things and where it's been. And maybe you'll gain appreciation a little bit more for the tools that you have at your disposal now. So we've broken it up into several sections: JavaScript, CSS, HTML, tooling, services, browser and development, and hosting. We can talk about each of these. Let's kick it off with JavaScript, which has seen a tremendous amount of improvements in 1,000 different ways.
Yeah, I think the first one we got here is just TypeScript in general. So adding types to the language, although like we haven't technically added types to the language, but the TypeScript has been around for, I think, about 10 years or so.
Which sounds outrageous to say that, yeah.
I was looking to buy the domain learntypescript.com, and I was like, who bought this, you know? And I like looked it up and it's Microsoft. Microsoft registered this thing in, let me pull up the date here. They registered it in 2012. So almost 10 years ago, they registered the domain learntypescript.com, which is amazing that a TypeScript has been around for even longer than that. But it's awesome because it makes your code less error prone. It's way easier to dev when you're using TypeScript because of the auto completion that you get, and the type checking and all that stuff. And it's just some of the biggest pains of JavaScript was that you would have to wait till you hit the browser to realize something was wrong. And then you sort of got to backtrace that and to figure out, oh, I spelled this thing wrong, or that's not actually a property. And having that right in your editor yelling at you before, as you type the thing, huge improvement.
Yeah, I'm looking at Wikipedia here. TypeScript made its first public appearance in October of 2012. So those of you who've been grinding on a project for a couple months and wondering why it's not getting any traction or whatever, I think that's a good lesson. You just, projects over time, you know, can gain footholds as they grow and improve. So that's like pretty amazing. 2012, October. Wow.
Man, they registered this domain on September 28, 2012. So just a couple days before they announced it.
Hey,
if
there.
Only I had been keeping my ear to the ground, I could have grabbed it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, TypeScript has been such an improvement in my daily life. I just did a big refactor, and I cannot imagine having done that without TypeScript. It would made things so much easier. Another one is like little language improvements in the how we write JavaScript. For instance, optional chaining. How many, before we had optional chaining, you had to use Lodash has to check nested, deeply nested properties to see if they exist. Otherwise, if one thing at any point in the chain did not exist, it was going to cause your code to crash. Now we have optional chaining, which will just return null instead of crashing your code or causing an error because of a missing object property at some point. Sometimes you just want to say, if deeply nested thing exists, then I can do this thing without having to check each step along the way or use an external function like has. So optional chaining, it's made my life so much better. I can't imagine coding without it today.
Next one is async, await, and promises. Flow control promises. In JavaScript have been so tricky. And we used to have to use this library called async.js, and they had a whole bunch of methods where you could hot potato Q. data, or yeah, you could use Bluebird, and just having nice, clean, first party support for writing flow control and promises in JavaScript has been a game changer for complex stuff.
It's been a game changer, yeah. And at first, I don't even know, like, promises kind of missed me a little bit at first because I was working a lot in callbacks and they felt kind of fine to me. And I felt like promises just feel like another way of writing a callback. You know, it felt like the same thing. But once we got async await, for some reason,
yeah,
that made me really enjoy the flow a lot more. And then that's when I went all in on it. Array methods. Yeah, array methods. Those didn't used to exist. A lot of tools for immutability in general in JavaScript have kind of come recently where you're no longer modifying an array or a collection of things. You're creating a new array of collection things based on one. And that concept, I think, has really, it's made me a better developer in a lot of ways because there are less mysterious bugs. But I also just feel like I have a little bit more control over everything. And honestly, between filter, map, reduce, I feel like I can accomplish so many things. I was doing some like really complex operations the other day our back end, and I just felt like I had full control over the data. Whatever I wanted this data to do, I could do it with any of those array methods. So shout out to array methods.
10 years ago, JavaScript was nested for loops.
Yeah.
You'd have for I equals zero, I plus plus, and then it's not uncommon to have J, K, and even more inside of that. And totally. You'd have them nested three levels deep, and you'd be modifying the data you're looping over. And if you needed the original data, then you had to make a copy of that before you did it. And
a copy of it was no fun.
No, yeah, you're right. That was
use spread.
That was really tricky as well.
Yeah.
There was no spread. Yeah. The DOM interaction has gotten much better. I don't know. This one might be lost on a lot of new devs, but the reason we have jQuery is that working with the DOM was incredibly difficult. jQuery did not go away because React and all these frameworks came here. jQuery went away because vanilla JavaScript basically implemented everything that jQuery does. And it is much simpler just to use the built-in values than jQuery in almost every single use case. So query selector all, being able to traverse, go up a level, parent, child selectors, things like that. Is very, very doable in vanilla JavaScript.
Yeah, all of the DOM traversal features. I think when, I'm thinking like 2011, when jQuery would have been at its like peak usage, and you're thinking like, wow, it would be really neat if you could just do all this stuff in the browser and not have to use jQuery. And here we are.
Yeah.
And like nobody cares. It's awesome. I mean, people care, people use it, but we're not just like sitting there being like, wow, this is incredible. So sometimes I think it is worthwhile to take a step back and smell the roses here. I think all that stuff is amazing. Another one, arrow functions have made things a lot easier to not set up a new scope, to not just have like these inline callbacks that can be really, really simple. You won't have to do a whole this equals that that we used to have to do, or that var that equals this, where you're setting this to be a variable so that you can keep track of what scope you're in. None of that stuff you really have to worry about anymore, because you can use arrow functions to control the block scope when you want it to. And honestly, the syntax is nice and easy. It feels good. Combine usage with destructuring and array map or array methods feels very good in use. Big fan.
I think in general, ES6 was a huge, huge breath of fresh air for JavaScript. We got spreads and rest and template strings and let
do a whole episode on that. Yeah,
ES modules, all of that stuff. It was very, very tricky before that. And specifically when 6 to 5 rolled out, it was that was huge. 6 to 5 turned into Babel. And what that did allowed us to do is to write modern JavaScript and compile it back to ES5. And that almost everything in ES6 was, you could bring it back. So that was big, big, big.
It's the Epcot center of JavaScript.
Totally, totally, absolutely. It's funny because like Babel sort of gets this like, these days where it's just like, oh my gosh, there's so many things and it's not working. And often that's what will pop up in your error messages, Babel, whatever. But don't forget where you came from, because Babel made all of this doable.
That's very funny. Yes. You have a note in here, looping. We kind of touched on this.
Yeah,
but
we covered that.
Yeah. It was really, we had to use a lot of for loops in the past. Now we have four of neat things for each.
Being able to pause a for loop with the for of or for in, because you can, that's one thing about map, filter, reduce, is you can't await inside of them. So if you need to do anything asynchronous in a loop, you can use the for of or for in loops, which is awesome.
We have a async for each function. Do you have one of those in your code base as the utility function?
Async for each. No. What does that do?
I have an async. It just allows you to do an async for each. For each of these things, asynchronously do something.
Oh, but what do you need a utility function for that?
So that I don't have to have a for loop in my code and it just reads a nicer async for each.
It just takes a callback and does that for each one.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, if it flows nice and easy. I don't know. It's probably unnecessary, but I like it.
Next one we have here is like prettier in general. Before we had prettier, you would spend a lot of time formatting your code to be indented properly and to re-indent and to follow code guidelines. We had these huge code guidelines of like, what do you do when it's more than 20 characters long? Do you put them each on their own? Do you indent? How many spaces do you indent? And all of that is just like, you don't want to think about that. You just code the most gnarliest code ever, hit save, and the thing is formatted perfectly. It's something we used to teach in the bootcamp, being like, make sure you spend a lot of time like making sure your code is readable and indented properly, because clean code is a part of being a good developer. And now it's just like, doesn't matter anymore. You literally just save the thing. I know some people don't like prettier, but in general, it's amazing. I'm totally on board.
I don't do any projects without it anymore. But when it first came out, I was aboard of this skeptical train, but not because I thought that like formatting wasn't useful, but because I just thought, what is this doing that my ESLint setup already isn't doing, which honestly wasn't very much. There was like a huge overlap between my ESLint setup and prettier, which was actually really nice because it was easy to transfer over. But once I just dropped prettier in there and it makes all these decisions for you, and I'm no longer having to think about any of the formatting stuff, it is way better. And honestly, I do prefer Prettier's formatting over anything else I'm using, even though I do use it with ESLint. I do very much love what Prettier has done for my code base overall and just code in general. I cannot live with, if for some reason it's like having like an error. Sometimes you move into a new environment, you save, it's not doing it. It drives me bananas, and I have to stop what I'm doing to figure it out.
Yeah, feels weird to not have it. I think the big thing for me was just being okay with Prettier's very opinionated. There's not a lot of settings. So if you don't like something, tough noogies, because you just kind of have to like give it up and be okay with the formatting that they do. And once I just got used to the formatting that Prettier used versus what I was used to, it was okay.
Yeah. I like most of their options. I use the single quote. I use tabs. I use semicolons is equal to false. So yeah, I do a little bit of overrides, but nothing crazy there. All right, let's get into real quick one of our sponsors, one of our freshest sponsors, and that is FreshBooks. Wes,
FreshBooks.
You just told me you've been using FreshBooks for a third of your life. So do you want to talk about FreshBooks?
Yeah, I went into my FreshBooks. I was doing some end of year accounting, just wrapping some stuff up. And I wanted to see my most recent invoices. So I clicked it and I accidentally clicked it twice. And it showed me my oldest invoices. And I had sent my oldest invoice out in 2009, which is a long, long time ago. It is over a third of my life, which is amazing. It's been with me ever since. It's been great. I can go back and see how much money I've made over the years and who I've billed and what clients still owe me money from 2015, things like that. Wow. And it's the best way to manage your books, your expenses, your time tracking, turning your, maybe you have an expense that you incur, you register a domain name and you log that and you can turn that into an invoice for a client right away. Does all of that stuff for you. You can import all of your transactions right from your bank account. Check it out. FreshBooks.com/syntax. Make sure you use syntax in the, how did you hear about us section? Thank you, FreshBooks, for sponsoring.
Sick. Cool. All right. Let's get into the next section here, which is CSS, which has also gotten, I would say, an extreme amount of updates. This is like not small update territory. There are so many things in CSS that as we were writing these notes, I was thinking, and I could just do a whole episode about CSS. What's better today than it was before? But one of my favorite ones, and I'm going to go off the board here. One of my favorite ones is variables. When they first announced variables, I said, I don't know about that syntax. Because it's a little bit more verbose than
the dashes.
Yeah, the dashes and the var function. It's a little bit more verbose than, let's say, a dollar sign, which is what Sass was using, or just straight up text, which is what Stylus was using. So it was easy for me to say, I don't know if these things are as good as Sass, but the killer feature of CSS variables is the fact that they are active and live and reactive in your entire site. If you change a CSS variable, everything within that scope that uses that variable will be updated, making things like theming exceedingly easy. So CSS variables, shout out to CSS variables, easily my goat feature for new CSS stuff, maybe even more so than Flexbox, because we had grid frameworks that could do all that stuff before. And granted, Grid allows you to do that without. But man, CSS variables really, really have changed how I develop websites.
Let's pick the next one, which is layouts are much easier. So I'm going to say Flexbox and Grid were game changers for doing things that were not possible with those. Like for most of your layouts, you could use a framework. But for doing responsive layouts, things that wrap, things that grew to their content, complex layouts where things were beside each other. You had to do that with floats previously. So much easier. Flexbox and Grid are game changers. They're a little bit tricky to learn initially, but anything like layout is a very, very complicated thing. And I challenge you to find a layout engine in literally anything else that is as good as what we have in the browser. I'm very, very happy with Flex and Grid.
Yeah. And the cool part is that like Flexbox came out and everyone was like, it's like Steve Jobs giving a presentation. Here's Flexbox. And everyone's like, yes, I want Flexbox. It's the best. And then you think that's it. And then there's, wait, one more thing. We also have Grid. And Grid is like, you know, it was came a little bit later. It wasn't out at the same time. Fluxbox popped and everybody was like, this is the best. And then Grid comes out and you're just like, how lucky are we that we have Fluxbox and Grid now? Oh my word. Yeah, those are some of the best game changers for me too. I mean, just being able to use that stuff in day-to-day dev flow and not having to worry about libraries has really changed my life significantly as a developer. Another one would be these VH units, or VHVW, viewport height and viewport width units. Small little feature there, but I use those kind of a ton. Oftentimes you really need to work within the viewport. So it's nice to be able to use those units and have here's some Safari stuff and whatever with those. But hey, I gotta love my VH and VW units.
Super handy. And I don't use them all the time, but VMin and VMax as well will give you the min or max of the width or the height. Big fan of those. Very simple one, overflow scroll on mobile. So when the iPhone first came out, for the first couple iPhones, you were not able to have a scrolling div. And in general, the web had to sort of be re-architected for touch devices and small screens in general. And there was very, very simple things like I wanted to put a bar of icons along the bottom of my app and let you scroll the content. And if you wanted to do that, if you wanted to scroll anything other than the body of your thing, you had to use these huge JavaScript hacks that were, and I don't know if I should call them hacks, they're huge JavaScript libraries that would emulate scrolling on the device for you. And now you can slap a Fluxbox and a Grid overflow scroll on the thing and everything just works out really, really nicely on mobile. So it's been a game changer. These things were so, so difficult back in the day. And now it's a simple one line of CSS.
Yeah, it is awesome to say the least. Another one would be even color formats. You remember back in the day, color safe hex values, there was only like a handful of hex values. I wish I knew how many there were off the top of my head here. But there were only, we had hex and we had named CSS colors, but you could not use every single hex value. It wasn't like the hex board has been totally open for you. You had to use, I believe they were called color safe hex values. The safe color codes for hexadecimal, these 216, there was only 216 different colors you could use. People always wondered why the web looked so bad for so long. 216 colors. Wow.
And there was like five fonts as well.
Yeah, five fonts and 200. You could use Georgia or Arial. You couldn't even use Helvetica.
Oh, man. Verdana. Justified Verdana was my jam like 15 years ago.
I did everything in Georgia. I could not tell you why. I just, Georgia was my font. I don't know why. But yeah, so we can now use HSLA and transparency and gradients and all these different color modes. And soon we're going to have color functions. Yes. Big yes for me.
Position sticky is the last thing. Sticky headers, especially when the iPhone first came out, the iPhone had these like sticky headers where as you scrolled through your contacts, it would like put the letter of the contact up top. And everyone's like, oh man, we need that in the browser. And even on like the syntax.fm, go to syntax.fm and scroll the page. You can scroll the whole page and then the player sticks. And then you can scroll a list of the current podcasts and you can also scroll the show notes. That would be a very tricky layout to do even 5 years ago.
Let's talk about HTML now. HTML has seen a ton of change. Specifically, if you go all the way back to pre-HTML5, which, let's face it, I think, wouldn't that have been? I don't know when HTML5 dropped, sometime around 2011, somewhere in that world. I can like pinpoint based on the jobs I was working on. But I remember before HTML5, you only had a handful of elements to work with. I mean, granted, there were more than a handful, but what we didn't have is the semantic meaning necessarily that we had, because you could use a div and a paragraph tag, and all of our friends, the H1 through 6 were there, and anchor tags and stuff, but we didn't have main, we didn't have section, we didn't have a side, we didn't have article, we didn't have nav. There are so many elements that we use today to denote what this thing is that in the past would have just straight up been a div. And I personally... It's so weird to think about how many how much everything was just straight up divs, paragraph tags, spans, and links, right? Now we have so much more meaning in our HTML and so many more elements. It's just been a tremendous improvement. The things that have honestly made my life the most improved in HTML is the addition of like multimedia tags. I've done a lot of video and audio on the web throughout my entire career. You know, one of my first pre-web dev job roles was I worked as a projectionist for the University of Michigan. And while I was there, I developed this like a co-presentation multimedia program for Flash, where we would record a screen capture of their device and we would record a video feed and we would display them side by side in sync. And the whole thing was a Flash app that I wrote. And this is like before I was a web dev. This is just like for fun project that I did at work. And that was so tremendously difficult to do. Not only did you have to use Flash, but you had to use Flash. And even then you had to do all these video format. It was unbelievably challenging. And now I think just how easy that would be today to keep two videos in sync with JavaScript and you have two video tags. It's like, man, how lucky are we? We have video tags, audio tags. We have a drawable canvas. I don't even use Canvas and I'm still like thankful that it's here.
I am just looking up the book, HTML5 by Remy Sharp and Bruce Lawson. And I very vividly remember sitting in a coffee shop and just reading this entire book and being so excited about all the stuff that was in there. And there, obviously, the stuff that you talked about is video and audio and webcam access and web workers. And this book is 11 years old now. And I think it'd be kind of cool to have, maybe have Remy on the podcast and talk to him like, hey, like you wrote this book 11 years ago, which this stuff still seems new. Geolocation, web workers, web sockets. I remember writing some stuff in web sockets and seeing it appear on the page in real time. And Socket.io, Guillermo Rauch wrote Socket.io. And that was like a huge time in web development for new stuff coming on the scene. And it still seems like local storage and HTML5 video and webcam access. This stuff still seems new to me. Doesn't it seem newish to you?
Seems new to me. Yeah, it all seems very new. I remember every single time a book apart book would drop, it was like a shift in how you were going to code websites from that point forward. You know, the HTML5 book, the responsive web development book, the CSS3 book. I mean, there's just been so many tremendous shifts in education from those aspects alone. But yeah, HTML has seen a huge amount of change. We have all these elements. We have all these new features. We have multimedia stuff. And now the new things that are coming are web components, right? I don't know how much web components you've done, Wes, but I did a course on it recently. And so I really got to dive into the world of web components. And one thing that I really enjoy about web components is just the true nature that you can bring it from project to project with you without having to have a library. The fact that I have a video player now that's all 100% web component based, and I'm not going to have to rewrite my video player if I'm moving from any other thing to any other thing ever again, which I'm not going to do anyways, but it doesn't matter. I found web components, while their implementation can be a little bit clunky, it is really neat that you can do all that stuff in browser without a library anymore. So very, very neat. Another thing that's very, very neat is Sentry and how they allow you to see all of your errors and exceptions and also track the performance of the users on your website. So that way you can see if your website is performing up to snuff or not. Now, I love Sentry. I've been using it for a long time myself. And one thing that I always appreciate about Sentry is it makes it so easy to see how big of an impact this is having. When you go to your page with your issues, it'll have all of the issues that have occurred. And sometimes issues are things that need to be taken care of, and sometimes they're not, right? Sometimes it's a one-off thing that happened to one person in one specific use case, and maybe it's because of a browser extension or something, right? Who knows? But other times, you just push an update, and all of a sudden, there's 100 occurrences of the same thing, and you can see it happening right there with those little bars that just shoot straight up in their little flame chart that's there. And It is so helpful to be able to come in here and see that, click on it, see how many people it's affecting, seeing if it's any specific browser, seeing if it's tied to specific user accounts. You can push a GitHub issue directly from there, and then you can make sure this thing is fixed. You can mark it as fixed, have it tied to a release, and then be super happy when it never pops up ever again. So if you want all of that and more, head on over to Sentry at sentry.io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you'll get 2 months for free. Definitely one of my favorite services on the planet and absolutely love them. So thank you so much for Sentry for sponsoring. Okay, let's get into some tooling things. A lot of changes in tooling, considering the tooling that we had maybe 10, 15 years ago consisted largely of an FTP application that you would drag your stuff into and then a text editor. Mine, of course, was TextMate. That's what I used before Sublime. Then I used Sublime and then I used Atom very briefly, but not really. And then the VS Code. I pretty much went TextMate, Sublime, VS Code. And here we are at VS Code. Yeah.
Yeah. The editor has, and I think one of our very first shows like 3 years ago was when I made the switch over to VS Code and we were just gushing about how amazing it is. And since then, that was probably 3 years ago, it's gotten like even better and even better and even better.
Yeah.
Exponentially better. And like, it's so good. Like it used to be just a thing that you type into. And I remember people would be like, why don't you just use Notepad? Or why don't you use, what's the one that everyone used to use? It was like Notepad++. That was a big one at the point. And now like we have Git integrated and auto completion and the thing is smart about your JavaScript. And yeah. Oh man, it's, this stuff used to be much more difficult. So it's really good. Other tooling things, the latest crop of tooling is really, really good. You have ES Build, Vite, Snowpack, Parcel. All of these things are, I'm not even going to include like the last generation, which was, I don't know, like we've had like so many iterations. Like we had Grunt.
Grunt and Gulp.
Which was kind of like, I remember people would have 400 line Grunt configs. Oh, yeah. And then we had Gulp. And I had, I don't know, 100 line Gulp config. And, when you had Gulp, you'd have like Browserify configs in there. And then you moved to Babel. And then, I've moved my course platform from build tool to build tool probably 4 or 5 times now. And every single time, the amount of code that I have to write and the amount of complexity that I have just gets cut in half. And I'm at a point now where it's just a couple lines in my, the biggest part of my build tool now is specifying which files the entry points should be at.
Yeah, I love that about it. And then every new tool that pops up seems to like really get it. Like the Svelte kit config is tiny. You're just basically picking your output format. Like, do you want this to be a static site or a node site or whatever? But then even like Astro is like, oh, do you need Markdown? You don't have to do anything for this. You can just use Markdown files. Oh, do you need Sass? You don't have to do anything for it. We have it already. And it's like, that's what I want. That's what I've always wanted. And that's one of the reasons why I loved Meteor is because if Meteor, I wanted to do Sass, all I had to do is Meteor add Sass and not touch a config file. And it just worked.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are people so obsessed with having 200 line config files when there are tools that can do it for you at the time? And that's one of the reasons why I was always surprised that more people didn't use Meteor for things like that. Me, my platform's only been on Meteor and then now Snowpack and Vite. So, you know, I haven't changed my tooling that much, but I've seen the evolution. I've definitely used a lot of these things. They've gotten a lot better. Another thing is like image compression. Back in the day, we used to have to like drag and drop. Well, one, we had to use HTML or we had to use image sprites a lot of times for icons. Now we have SVG icons, so we don't have to do that anymore. I mean, we got image fonts in there temporarily, but those were kind of not a great idea considering they were often way too huge. But we also got things like built-in image compression into our tools, and things like Gatsby and Next.js have made it part of their flow entirely of working in it where it's going to compress and serve up the right image for you. There's also now tools like Cloudinary that allow you to have images on the fly that be encoded whenever you need them to be whatever format you could possibly need them. But before, even at some point when you wanted to have multiple images of things, you were creating a web version of it. You were creating a desktop version of it, like a 2x one for our Retina displays. You were creating multiple images by hand of the same thing, and it often involved you dragging and dropping them into some sort of application that would kick out a compressed or a minified version of that image. And then eventually we got that built into build tools, and now it's just built into platforms, and we hardly have to think about it.
Yeah, it used to be where you'd have to, like, every time you added a new sprite, you'd have to, like, run a script or a Photoshop thing.
What is that, Sprite Cow?
Yes, we had Sprite Cow. I remember I used to drag and drop my images into Smushit to compress them before I updated. And it's so much easier, especially now that we're building our applications, being like, I don't know, this is my entry point of Index.js, and literally any asset that goes through this is automatically handled. And I don't have to think about, like, I remember I had WordPress websites where I would have images that were never used anywhere, but they would never, you could never drop them because it was impossible to find out what was used and what wasn't used.
It's funny. So Sprite Cow still exists, Wes, and is made by an agency, like a design agency in the UK called The Team. And I clicked on their thing. They're still active. There's blog posts from 2021. So it's I wonder what kind of traffic they get in 2021 from people coming to Sprite Cow. I honestly, I really am interested because that's one of those services I haven't thought about in so long, but it looks fine and it works still. So, like, are people still using Sprite Cow, and or how much traffic is this still generating for them? I'd be very interested in that information.
I bet they're still using it because, like, as much as we talk about these, like, cutting edge everything, I bet for every single page React application built in Next.js, being rewritten to Svelte, there is somebody with a 11-year-old tech stack that you just can't change the way that it works because it's too large.
Time to update the sprite.
That's just, like, I still see it, like, on Apple's website the other day. I was on the store for Apple on, like, some other country, not Canada or anything like that, and they had a title that was in a PNG, and it was pixelated on my monitor. You know, you still pretty often see, like, first of all, text should not be an image for the last 10 years. And also, why it should be, if you're doing images or icons like that, why is it not, like, high def? Like, yeah, we've had these iPhones that are high DPI for, I don't know, probably 8 years now. And some of these websites are still sending pixelated images to you.
Yeah. It's rough. It's rough.
Hot module reloading is a huge game changer. So we used to have to go to your terminal, quit your application, and start it again. Or we used to have no build process at all, and you'd have to manually refresh the page, which is a huge pain in the butt when you're trying to debug things like a drop down or a specific, you're six levels into a form where you hit next, next, next. And hot module reloading has cut that feedback cycle down from sometimes minutes to seconds. You just hit save and you can see the result on the page. So that's a big one for development.
Yeah, that was game changing. I remember when we even got fast reload, that was a big, big change for us. So being able to have even an auto reload, not having to hit the reload key at all. Now we have HMR. Yeah. It's like, wow. Each of those were kind of seismic shifts. And then now you wrap them all together and it's even way, way better.
What was the desktop app auto that everybody used for SaaS, auto reload?
There was the app where the developer of the app was kind of a jerk? Was that guy? There was
I don't know.
There was an app that people used for a long time that, like, did all that stuff. But, like, the developer was always kind of, like, rude to people on Twitter and kind of like a, he was like just aggressive.
There was a paid one and a free one. I'm not sure.
Code something.
Anyways.
Code kit.
Yeah, code kit. And then there was a free one.
I don't know if the developer's a jerk. So I don't quote me on that. I don't know the guy.
Code kit and pre-pros were huge. And I'd be curious how many people are still using that these days as well. It looks like it's still being developed pretty heavily.
Interesting.
Pretty heavily used. The reviews are Johnny Ive, Phil L. Looks like some fake reviews on the website. That guy. Kind of interesting that those things are still kicking around.
Next up would be services that make things easy. And we've had a ton of services come So we have image resizing, like we mentioned with Cloudinary, things like that, services like that, video hosting and transcoding services like Mux and Cloudinary both do that. Accepting credit cards, Stripe. Back in the day, if you wanted to accept credit cards, it was pretty much PayPal or bust. Now you have even things like Stripe. I use Braintree, which is fine, but it's not Stripe. Stripe is just is super easy. The Braintree APIs, it will make your kind of head explode, but it's certainly not as difficult as it needs to or as it has been in the past.
We have one more. We have a tweet here from Brad Ledford. We asked on Twitter, like, what are things that are so much better these days? And that didn't stop people from using it as a chance to complain about some things in web development. But from Brad says, entrepreneur-friendly licensing, cloud databases, authentication, etc. That's a really good point, is that previously, if you wanted to use a service, you would have to have phone calls and quotes, and you'd be enterprise contracts and all that stuff. And now, literally, if you want enterprise level tech, you can sign up and be devving on it in like 6 minutes. And it's amazing because that allows entrepreneurs to just use this enterprise level tech. You can go ahead and start businesses based on the sort you're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Very true. Very, very true. Yeah, so let's actually take a quick break to talk about our last sponsor today, which is Linode, which is the perfect place to host a modern or a non-modern website. Wes, do you want to talk a little bit about Linode?
Yeah, actually, we have a section coming up. Just hosting is much easier. So before Linode was around, what did you have to do? You literally had to go buy servers and rack them either in your own office, which you had access to the internet backbone, or you would put them in a data center. And if you wanted to be able to scale up your application, you would have to go and buy more servers and hook them up and load balance them. And you'd have to run that all yourself. Now there's companies like Linode where you can simply just pause your application, drag a slider, and you'll be running on larger infrastructure in no time. You can sign up for multiple boxes if you want, and you can load balance them. They provide all the products you need to just, they handle all of that for you. And it's literally just a software dashboard these days versus having to run your own servers and put hard drives in them and do backups and all of that stuff. So if you are looking for a host for your application, or for pretty much, they have all kinds of different services you should check out. Check out Linode. They're going to give you $100 in free credit. Go to Linode, linode.com/syntax. And that's going to get you $100 in free credit. Thank you, Linode, for sponsoring.
Sick. Okay, let's get into the last sections where we have browser and development. Developer tools now have gotten incredible, whether or not it's the grid tools that are both in all of them. Now, but you have just so many additional tools in the browser to debug anything. You can check to see, make sure everything's running at 60 FPS. You can check to make sure all of your network requests are coming in. You can check to make sure your HTML, your developer tools that are React developer tools or Svelte developer tools, any of that stuff just works so well now in the browser. And it's just very good. Those of you who don't know, these tools used to not be built into the browser. You used to have to install an application called Firebug, which eventually was a browser extension. And that thing sucked. No hate against Firebug. It was as good as it got at the time. And at the time, it was totally revolutionary. But if you compare it to what we have today, a Firebug was not great to use to me. I don't mean to talk trash about Firebug, because I think it's fantastic. But It is like crazy for me to think about to go from Firebug to what we have today and just how much endlessly better that was. I just remember when we were having to do IE6 testing and things like that, you'd have to fire up the IE6 computer that had no development tools whatsoever. And just
you'd have a bookmarklet for Firebug.
Just figure out why. Why isn't this thing working? I don't know. I guess I'm just going to try things. Okay. I'm just going to figure it out until it works.
I'm just looking right now at a tweet from Ben Vinegar, who's a dev over at Sentry, one of our sponsors. And he's showing a part of Sentry, which shows you your largest contentful paint. And they have this thing that will track if you have, like, if your paints on your page are getting slow. And it's amazing that you can get down to the like things that you would probably never know that your users are having a slow UI response. And he has this tweet that says, it's mind-blowing that 12, 13 years ago, you had to debug JavaScript with alert variable X is X. And now you have this level of visibility. And it's true. It's unreal, the tools we have and the insights we have into figuring out what is going wrong with our applications and peering into when that went wrong.
Yeah, endlessly better there. Cross-browser, cross-device testing is way not as big of a deal anymore. We can make little jokes about Safari all we want, but at the end of the day, absolutely was nothing as bad as trying to load up the site in three different browsers and getting three massively different results with the same code, which was a thing for so long.
Or you'd fix one and the other one would break.
It was a constant dance, and it was like definitely something that would be maybe considered the worst part of your job. And you had to become a developer who knew what all the pitfalls on all these different platforms were ahead of time so that you wouldn't have to run into them. I still remember the very first time I hit this error as a young buck when I was in high school. I had made like a website and I thought it looked good and it looked good to me. I was using Dreamweaver. So I was using all those fancy Dreamweaver tools. And then a friend of my brother's who was like older, who had some experience building websites. And he was just like, you might want to take a look at that thing in Internet Explorer. And I was just like, why? Why would I? Oh no. Like, I had no idea that was even a thing.
Such and a blow.
It was such a blow to my ego. I remember thinking like, oh crap, this looks terrible. And this is probably how most people were seeing the site. And I had no idea. And we were actually getting some traffic on the site. So it was a little distressing to say the least.
I was just looking at I have a whole drawer full of old phones and Android and older iPhones and things like that. And I used to have those things fired up all the time. And we would often have these like device walls at agencies.
I had a device lab in my office. Yeah.
I was just thinking about it. I was like, I haven't fired up any of these in probably over a year. And I was just like sitting there reflecting on like how consistent these browsers have become versus where we have started. And we used to have these like live reload where you'd pull up the website on like 15 different devices. You'd make a change and you could see it on every single website. They would all reload at the same time. And that is just not that much of an issue anymore. Like very rarely do I fire up another browser to check things or look into my Sentry or something like that and say, oh man, this thing is not working on this one browser. Things are getting really, really good.
Totally. So good. Yeah, hosting has gotten a ton better. SSL certificates. You used to have to plan your week around buying an SSL certificate, and you had to take out a second mortgage on your house to do so. They used to be very expensive and a tremendous pain in the butt. And now we don't really have that issue anymore. Everybody's just handing out certs willy-nilly for free now that we have Let's Encrypt everywhere and all the services handle it for you. Honestly, I could not have picked a better future for SSL certificates for me because I just really always hated dealing with that stuff. And now we don't have to, so that's great. Continuous integration and continuous deployment is basically baked into every platform that exists now. If you want to host a site somewhere, and it's like, you just push to your repo to deploy, the platforms all do it for you, whether it's Netlify or Render or Vercel. They're just that good. And it's so easy to get complacent with that. But that blew my mind even like 2 years ago. So it's still blowing my mind today. Yeah.
Scaling up. We just talked about this is one of our ad reads, but scaling up, whether that's with containers, whether that is with virtual machines where you can simply just give yourself more RAM or more disk space as you need it, whether that's with containers or serverless functions that scale up immediately. These are things that were not very, very easy to do. Even just 5 years ago, these were not as easy as they are now. Also, rollback, instant cutover, things like that, where you deploy your application to another server, you simply just cut the domain name over. If something screws up, you can roll that thing back. Those sometimes deploying was a whole day thing and you just be sweating bullets. Mm-hmm. I sure hope something doesn't goof up because I can't bring it back to where it was before.
Yeah, let me just, Brady, even before that, just dragging a folder into FTP and then being like, oh, I guess I just brought the site down by dragging that folder over. Let me just try it again. You know, I mean, just the amount of shift there that's gotten difference is crazy good too. Just in general with the usage of Git, that's a whole thing that took place too. If it feels like Git and GitHub have been here forever, let me tell you, that was very much not the case. I still remember Chris Coyer did that whole like thing. It was like, let's learn Git together. And that to me was like mind blowing at the time because I felt like I was too dumb to use Git. Everybody was starting to talk about why it's cool. And it definitely has been a big shift in terms of everybody just using Git and GitHub and it being a big thing. When before, you know, it was really very different in regards to having your code existing somewhere in a repository. Containers, I don't want to have to think about scaling really ever that much. I just don't want to personally as a developer. Being able to click plus one to add a new horizontal or vertical scaling has just been very nice for people like me who really, truly, you know, just throw a little bit more resources at it, pay another $15 a month on it, and there you go. Now it's faster.
I'm very curious. Now, when I started using Git myself, I'm just going back to...
Can you find out when your GitHub account was formed?
You can go to your github.com/your name, and then there is a contributions graph, and it will show your first contribution. On the side, mine goes down to 2010. I'm assuming that's the first.
Mine goes down to 2011. My first contribution on GitHub was March 14th, 2011, which actually tracks. Do you want to know why? Because I got my first web dev job March of 2011.
Man, that's so close to mine. So I have one commit in January 2010 and then nothing for the entire year. So I did something on 960 grid system and then I did nothing for the entire year. And I was doing development then. I just was not using Git.
I likewise.
Around March of 2011, everything picked up. That's awesome.
See, I had no real action in 2011 beyond just creating the account. My first real contribution was a public repository where I was making audio components for Angular. So like I was making like a slider that changed a sine wave pitch in Angular. So that's fun. I forgot all about that.
Wow. Some of my first commits were on this thing called Chromio, which is we made skins for Chrome DevTools.
Oh, cool. Because
there used to be a CSS file where you could add CSS to your Chrome DevTools. Man, that's 11 years old. I still own that domain name, chrome.io. Yeah,
that's a
hey, Google.
What? You own chrome.io?
I've been paying for that thing for 10 years. It's about time I get a payday on that, Google. Let's get that going.
Here's a good one, Wes. My second contribution here is from March of 2012, Level Up Tutorials, SaaS Tutorials. Hey.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's the genesis of Level Up Tuts right there, March 2012. I got my concussion in February of 2012. Started at Level Up in March. So there we go. I was already on the SaaS train in March of 2012. Wild.
March. Man, it's amazing how similar we are. I'm just looking at my March 2012, and I have HTML5 face detection, which is what really got me into speaking because I did this really cool tutorial on doing face detection. That's amazing that our histories are almost like bang on
in
what we've done. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm into it.
I was contributing to the Pods framework on WordPress. Man, that's kind of fun to look back and like see this thing. We were talking before the show started of like, we're starting to be like old guys.
Yeah.
Because we've been like literally doing the same thing for like 12 years now, at least like professionally.
Yeah, I know. It is starting to be an old guy. It's weird.
So that is everything is amazing in web development. We are very happy. Considering, me and you are not very negative people, but we are considering doing a similar show of things that are very tricky still.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that?
I'm in. That'll be fun.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. We'll do a lighthearted one.
I don't like being a complainy guy, but it's also nice to talk about things we wish were easier in web development.
Sometimes you got to be a complainy guy. It's fine.
Okay.
We all get those days.
Let's move into some sick picks. You got a sick pick for me today?
Oh, do I have a sick pick? I've been talking to you about this a little bit. And if you follow me on Instagram, you may have seen me post some clips from this thing or photos of it. I got a smart gym thing. Those of you who've listened to our fitness episodes know I'm pretty
so cool,
pretty like regimented about working out. I usually lift 4 days a week. I do some cardio. I do a lot of dance. I you know, I'm pretty serious about my fitness without being like serious about it, right? And we moved into a new house recently, and we've been talking about our gym space because we had this extra garage at our old house that we turned into a gym. It was fantastic for a gym because of the tall ceilings and stuff. This house doesn't have anything like that. So we just put our squat rack in the basement, and that squat rack in the basement just feels like it's not good. It feels like it doesn't fit. It's too small of a space for what it is. It takes up too much room. It doesn't work with anything. So we're just like, well, what should we do about the gym? And we ideally in some sort of future, we'll finish off one of the rooms to be more of a gym instead of like a guest bedroom. Cause that, I mean, we use it every day. So, Chris from Scotch.io has been posting about this Tonal, TONAL.com. And it's a system that uses magnets. Unlike some of these other ones, like there's one that's like the mirror where you just do cardio in front of the mirror. And there's another one, I think that's like barbells and weights, but you got to get it on your back somehow with a squat rack. It seems very scary. This thing is kind of like a workout machine where you have handles and you have a barbell and you have these arms that can be configured in every direction, but it turns the weight on and off via magnets. And it honestly is the closest to feeling like any Jetsons age technology that I've ever used in my entire life. It makes me feel like I'm living in the future when I use it. So like if you're doing a bench press, there's a physical button on the barbell. You push the button and that turns the weight on. It's like you can turn the weight on or off. You get stuck underneath this thing, you just turn the weight off. You don't have to have a spot or anything. But because it's all digital and it's all being done by magnets, it can do some really profound things that you cannot do with barbells and weights. Like it can simulate chains where the weight gets heavier the further into the lift you are. So at the furthest point in the lift, the weight is at its heaviest. And as you're decreasing it, the weight lowers. Or the opposite, where the weight's getting heavier as you're bringing it down. Like just so many cool things like that. Or if there's like a burnout mode where if you're like pushing it hard and you can't do that rep, it will like decrease the weight ever so slightly so you can finish it. It is so stinking smart. I never have to pick up a piece of weight plate to put it on a barbell ever again. It
amazing.
Suits my needs so supremely. Every single time I step up, I don't even think about the weight values that I'm lifting. I don't think, am I lifting X amount of pounds, because it's always too hard in the best kind of way where it's like just pushing your limits, but it's never too hard to finish the workout. So I can safely say that this thing is incredible. The biggest downside to it by a long shot is the price point. It is very expensive, but if you're the type of person who's already paying, you know, $100 a month for a gym membership or something like that, then it can definitely be worth it, especially if you have a family of people who are going to be using it. My wife and I, like I said, we're both using it. We're both down there just about every single day using it. So there's live classes and whatever. It is very, very expensive, very, very worth it. In fact, so worth it that we're selling the squat rack and all of our gym equipment. And this is going to
amazing.
Be the only single piece of anything that we have in the house to work out in, because it's that good. So good.
Man, I've been watching you do this, and a very, very interesting, because like I just ran the numbers with Caitlin, and I think it's 15 months of gym membership for both of us, which is like it's expensive up front, but if you're spending $60 a pop each on a gym membership, it sort of pays for itself, but that's the amount of money that you would spend in a year and a half. And if you sort of think about that, especially you're selling your squat rack and whatever, you probably make a couple $100 at least on that.
Yeah.
So I am very, very interested to see how this goes for you. You say you love it. I'm going to check back in like 6 months and whatever. And
totally.
I kind of want this.
It's shockingly good. Like I said, it's the closest thing I feel like to like Jetson's age tech that I've ever used before.
Just magnets, being able to
turn the weights on and off, and you don't have to plan workouts because they have all of these ones planned out for you by, you know, really engaging people.
Yeah.
I found that there's live workouts like Peloton or anything like that, but yeah, it's good.
So did you, I was looking at it and they have like a people that will come install it for you. Did they come to your house and install it or did you do that?
It took like, they don't, actually they make you have their installers do it, which is kind of a middle finger that there's like, oh, we only want our people to do it. But it is like part of the warranty.
They don't want somebody putting it into drywall with four screws and right, pulling it on their face.
And it is,
so one person dead.
It is part of the warranty, yeah. So I had them do it. And honestly, their installation people were very good. They put it up in like 15 minutes and it's perfect. They didn't have any, probably the most professional installation, but I think that's largely dependent on the city you live in and the people who are installing it.
Yeah, I always hear, sometimes you hear about these like Best Buy installers or whatever, dude. And you get these like, I don't know. Anyways, my sick pick today is going to be a book from somebody who I have been following for a long time and has to do with investing. This is called Reboot Your Portfolio, 9 Steps to Successful Investing with ETFs by Dan Borlatti. Canadian. This is mostly probably for Canadians, although I would imagine Americans could get pretty much the same advice, just adjusted for American approaches to investing.
Just removing the U from color and...
yes.
Z instead of Z.
Well, like you guys have like different like retirement accounts and investment accounts and like in Canada. But the idea is the same in that you invest your money in index funds or ETFs, exchange traded funds. And the stats are there that they will outbeat any professional money manager. I used to recommend this book, like anytime my friends and I talk about this type of thing, I always recommended this book called Beat the Bank, which has this thing called a T-Rex score, because these investment advisors take a certain cut, and that certain cut eats into your compounding interest. And by the end of the day, they take all your money. So you can do this yourself. It's very simple. If you've got something as simple as just a savings account or something as complex as your retirement account, it's, this guy knows what he's talking about. He ran the podcast that was called Canadian Couch Potato, which is basically the very simple way to invest your future. And he hasn't done the Couch Potato podcast for a while. It's very good if you listen to the backlog. Now he's put out this book as well. So check it out. I'll link it up in the show notes.
Cool. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll definitely check that out. I'm going to shamelessly plug the Level Up Tutorials Black Friday sale, where you can get the cheapest price you'll ever be able to get on the Level Up Tutorials subscription. So if you head on to leveluptutorials.com/pro, you can sign up and save 50%, and you'll be able to keep that price as long as you do not cancel your subscription. So you want to keep it and hold on to it forever and ever and ever and ever, and just support me into the retirement home. That would be great. But yeah, you can head on over to leveluptutorials.com/pro, sign up today and save 50%. You'll get access to every tutorial course that we have on the site and 12 additional ones over the next year, as we have new courses coming out from amazing third-party content creators and courses from yours truly, like Astro for Everyone, Svelte Kit, Building Svelte Components, Web Components for Beginners, Modern CSS Design Systems, and so much more. So check it out, leveluptutorials.com. Thank you.
I will shamelessly plug all of my courses on half off for Black Friday. Check it out, westboss.com/courses. You can learn Gatsby and beginner JavaScript, full stack advanced React and GraphQL, ES6 for everyone. You want to talk about all, you haven't learned all the ES6 stuff that has been added to JavaScript since it came out, check that one out. There's all kinds of really good ones on there. They'll all be half off for Black Friday. westboss.com/courses.
Sick. Cool. Well, that's all I got.
That's me too. Check you later. Peace.
See you later. Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.